This is a special In the Field report from HeritageRadioNetwork.org. This program was made possible by Heritage Foods USA, the nation's largest distributor of heritage breed pigs and turkeys. Order online at HeritageFoodsUSA.com.
The Adaminelli family has been in the food business in Manhattan since the 1900s. The Adaminelli & Sons Butcher Shop has been a staple of the West Village since the 1950s. Its founder, Mr. Onfrio Ottomanelli, had six sons and a daughter. I got a chance to visit the brothers currently running the shop, Jerry, Frank, and Joseph. These guys are as old school as it gets, and I couldn't help but immediately fall in love with them.
Hi, I'm Jerry Ottomanelli, one of the brothers of O. Ottomanelli's and Sons Meat Market on Bleecker Street. I work with my brother Frank and my brother Joe. And my nephew Matthew, and of course our dedicated staff in the back. And we've been on Bleecker Street for over 60 years. We all grew up in the meat business, and here we are.
So when you were a kid, I mean, were you guys running around the shop, or when were you allowed kind of in the building?
After school, we came to work in the store. We didn't really work. We cleaned fat pails, scraped blocks, swept the floor, did odds and ends, things like that. And when we had a delivery, we made the delivery. Of course, we walked the deliveries at that time. We didn't have a bike, couldn't afford a bike. Well, on Bleecker Street, when my father started, there were six butchers, and he was the new kid on the block, so it was like an uphill battle for him to establish himself.
So, how many butchers are in the block now?
I think it's two or three.
Two or three?
Yeah.
I'm curious, what was kind of the first butchering job that you got to do? I mean, did they start you with the chickens? Did they start
you
with
the chickens? Of course, every butcher starts off with cleaning chickens.
Yeah.
Chickens and ducks, because that's the dirtiest job. And at that time, we had the guts inside the chicken, so we had to eviscerate the chickens, take the guts out, take the feet off, take the head off, clean the neck cavity,
yeah.
Take the windpipe off. You know what that's all about.
Yeah, no, I did it a little bit, not a ton.
Okay, we did it a ton.
Well, I was going to say...
And the worst one was the turkeys, to do the turkeys.
Why?
Because we had to use a breaker like to get the sinews out of the drumstick, so otherwise the sinews inside the turkey drumstick are very hard.
So you pull them out. And I guess too, it's like it's nice to have someone with smaller hands doing the chickens or the ducks if you're eviscerating them. I mean,
you still got to have strong fingers to pull everything out.
Well, so all the eviscerating I did was at a little processing plant up in Greenwich, New York. Where they had, it was like it was a Methodist family, and they had all the kids were in that side of the facility.
And they cleaned the chickens?
They cleaned the chickens, and I could, you know, and they're like teaching me. It was like always tough to get my hand like in
yeah, you
in
had
there
to get your hand
and get the lungs out. I could never find the lungs.
The lungs were okay. They could stay in. That was not a problem. You had to get the guts out and the giblets out, the liver, and you had to get out the gallbladder without, remember that little green thing in
yes,
there? Without
breaking
it. Otherwise, you would ruin the whole chicken.
So, you know, you grew up, you came here after school. Was there ever a point where you thought, like, hey, maybe this isn't for me, I'm going to go try something else?
Well, no, we all went to school. My father all sent us, made sure we all went to school. We went to high school. Some of us went to college. Some of us went to food trade schools, vocational schools. So it wasn't as though we didn't have any schooling. My father made sure that everyone got educated, and they had a decision to make after they got out of high school or college, whether it's come into the family business or go on to something else. There were four brothers here. One passed away last June, but there were six brothers altogether. One brother went into food distribution, and he works for a big company. Another brother moved to Florida, and he went into opening his own food business down there. But everyone did have a chance to do what they wanted to do, and they had the option to do what they wanted to do.
Right. So Do you guys kind of break up the specialties here in the shop? Is that right? Like, some people take, like, I don't know, I was reading, like, somebody does the wild game, somebody else is focused on poultry. Is there, well, like, an area that's
Frank goes to the meat markets. You know, there's one in Brooklyn, West 14th Street, Hunts Point also, and he selects all the fresh hanging meat, like the sides of beef, the veal, pork. Joe usually takes care of buying the poultry, and I try to buy the specialty meats, the game meats, like that.
So I always say the meat industry is kind of a rough industry. In films, especially if you're looking at it portrayed in the 40s, 50s, 60s, it's like mobsters, gangsters, bodies hidden in between the thing. I mean, is that just a movie thing? Is that a Hollywood thing?
I think that's... I mean, I was never exposed to that, so I don't know anything like that. I have no idea. I don't think so. But the meat industry, this 14th Street market, used to be 100 times larger than it is now. And there was, like, the hub of all the fresh meat on the East Coast. That was something to see. It was really, really something to see.
And I'm sure this neighborhood has changed a lot over the years.
Definitely, definitely changed. This used to be a real... I mean, it's changed for the better also. It's not that it's changed for the worse, but there used to be more families in this area, and they used to shop for larger families. Now, it's mostly singles and couples who are very small families, and they don't shop like they used to.
Not buying a bigger, smaller room. Yeah, well,
the thing is, right, they buy smaller, but they do shop often. They come every day, every other day. Because the one thing about the village, you can come out of an Elliott's and get meat, you can go to Murray's and get cheese, you can go to Amy's and get bread. You can do all your daily shopping every day, and you don't have to stock up.
When I walked in the shop and introduced myself, everyone said Jerry and pointed to the back wall. Jerry walked out, shook my hand. As the oldest of the brothers, he was clearly in charge. Next, I talked to Joe, who's the youngest of the brothers. And I'm going to be honest, he was a little shy. But by the end of our chat, we felt like old friends. Can I get you to just introduce yourself?
Joseph Adaminelli. I'm the youngest of all the brothers.
That was my next question, where you fell in the line.
Right.
So that means you're the toughest and the smartest, right?
No. We're all smart.
What name are you?
I'm the oldest. Yeah.
So you're the boldest. So you're the boldest.
Yeah, I would say I'm the boldest. I'm the only one who made it to New York.
Really?
So far. Did you ever question your decision to stay in the family business, or you always knew kind of this is where you wanted to be?
Really, basically where I wanted to be.
Yeah?
After college, I came here.
What did you study in college?
Marketing.
Marketing?
Yeah.
So you're in charge of the marketing here?
Yeah, I'd say that.
Yeah? So, what's it like, your marketing for a business that's, you know, half a century old? I mean, how is it different for you?
Come up with new ideas, new products, and... advertise them, and you know, see the feedback from the customers, see what works, what doesn't work, and take it from there.
I'm sure that people's, you know, Jerry was mentioning people's tastes have changed a little bit. You know, people are buying more for smaller families or individuals.
Right.
I mean, what have you noticed as far as have certain cuts changed in popularity, or are people more into like lamb or beef than they used to, or
people like their steaks?
Yeah.
2-3 times a week, you know, especially on the weekend. People come in here, buy steaks a lot.
What's the go-to steak?
The cowboy, that's the bone-in ribeye, the boneless ribeye, shell steak, and the porterhouse a little bit, you know, like, that would be a steak for two. It's cut nice and thick.
So you hear a lot this day and age about, you know, dry aging or wet aging. What do you guys do?
We do dry age.
And can you tell me a little bit about, like, the dry age options or the process you use? I mean, is it something you've always done? It's not new to you, I'm assuming.
No. You start with fresh meat, and you age it yourself. You know, it's got to be in a dry environment, no moisture. And it takes, like, 2 to 3 weeks to reach its peak.
And then what happens? Can you just, you can't just dry age something forever, right? I mean,
no,
what's
I say 3 weeks. I mean, some places want it like 4 weeks, 5 weeks, but then And you have to, you know, you lose a lot of the outside cuts.
Yeah, so it's tougher for you because you're losing a lot more of the meat.
Yeah, then.
So what do you eat when you go home?
Ribeye.
And do you cook?
No, my wife cooks.
How does she cook your ribeye?
Medium well.
Medium well?
Yeah,
nice.
Very good.
You got to say that one more time. My wife is a good cook.
Yeah, my wife is a good cook.
Now, has there been a change in dealing with, like, whole animals versus getting things in primals, or has that shifted for you guys, or?
No, basically, more or less the same.
Yeah, over the years?
Yes.
Any kind of fads that you miss or wish would come back? You know, like Atkins, which was big for a while in the late 80s, early 90s, did that?
No, people like their beef, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, they'll exercise and then they'll have a nice steak. They'll eat chicken too, you know. Change the diet a little bit now and then.
What do you think of the, you know, there's kind of a rise of like, in kind of pop culture of butchers being kind of this sex symbol, status symbol. You see them on the picture of magazines and there's, you know, I mean, you guys have been around forever. It's not like a new thing, so... I mean, do you have kind of young kids coming, wanting to apprentice with you or learn from you?
No, I don't think, I have a daughter, I don't think she's going to go into this business.
Does your daughter know how to cut meat?
No, she does fashion.
She does fashion. A different type of meat.
Yeah.
So, I've worked, most of the bosses that I've had, when I ask them what their retirement plan is, they say my retirement plan is to die. Like,
well, that could happen too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know about the retirement plan yet. We didn't get there yet.
What, you know, is there anything that you kind of you know, is there a question that you guys get all the time that you're like, man, I wish people would just get this figured out, you know, or is there like a go-to?
Well, some people, they want to buy like a pound of meat for like four people. It's not enough. You have to tell them it's not enough meat, you know. Average, you know, half to three quarters of a pound per person, you know. Don't try to oversell them. Try to give them advice, you know what I mean?
So you guys have the storefront here on Bleecker. Are there other ways for people to buy from you?
No.
You have to come. You got to come. You have to have the experience.
Come or call in, right.
And so I know that Matt, who does Matt belong to?
Frankie.
That belongs to Frankie. And is there anyone, like, who's in the pipeline to come up after?
That's about
you guys
it right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's on the recruitment end. I'm curious, and you can tell me if you don't want to answer this, but obviously the neighborhood has changed a lot since you opened, you know, retail rental prices. I mean, do you guys own the space? Do you rent the space? How's that changed over
the
years?
We own the space right now.
Yeah.
Well, the bank owns it.
Any memories you want to share from kind of growing up, running around the shop, running around the neighborhood? Kind of, I mean, what did you do for fun when you weren't? When you weren't working, when you weren't in school, what kind of trouble were you getting into?
Just played around in the neighborhood. Played stoop ball. Went to the played basketball on 6th Avenue. Played football on Leroy Street.
Yeah. Were you an athlete?
Yeah, it wasn't a good one.
No.
Next to my friend, I wasn't that good. They were nice about it.
You were probably pretty strong, though, I would assume. Stronger than most of the guys. I mean, just after all the, like...
My friend said I was a butcher on and off the court.
How'd you meet your wife?
Well, neighborhood. Through a friend. Yeah?
Nice. Can you tell me about any of your favorite customers over the years? Anyone that kind of stuck out that you kind of had a personal relationship with or look forward to seeing or maybe didn't look forward to seeing? You don't have to name names.
No, every customer's... Most of our... Well, most, 99% of our customers are great, really. They are really nice. They'll wait in line. Last Christmas, they wait in line like an hour and a half, 2 hours online. People outside the door, around the block. They're very, very dedicated customers.
That's great.
Yeah, very dedicated.
Great. So, what about holidays? Is there a favorite holiday, least favorite holiday?
Christmas is busiest holiday.
Yeah.
Thanksgiving is just basically 89% turkeys, you know. Christmas is more labor intense.
One of the things I always think about that's, like, to me, the toughest thing about working in the meat business is you're basically in a refrigerator all the time.
Yeah, you get used to it.
Yeah?
Today's warmer. Today's warmer. So you're ahead of the schedule, right? You're ahead of the game. Go inside, it's warm.
Oh, man.
I might have connected most with Frank. It was fascinating to hear how he gets up super early every morning to go out and buy meat for the shop. He's also the go-to guy for great recipes on how to cook all the cuts they carry at Ottomanelli's. Probably most endearing was him telling me the story of how he met his wife.
Hi, I'm Frank Ottomanelli of Ottomanelli's and Sons on Bleecker Street.
Frank, where are you in the line of brothers?
I'm number three son.
Number three son?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I heard you're the guy who goes up to purchase the meat up in the Bronx?
I do what we do, fresh hanging meat with a beef, veal, lamb, and pork. I personally pick it. I have my own stamp. We have three refrigerator trucks, and one of my drivers meets me early in the morning. I start out much earlier than him. This way, it gives me time to select what I need for the day.
So, what is it like? I mean, I've never been up to the meat market. Can you tell me a little bit about, like, what it looks like? Who else is there? Like,
well, it's all scattered around now. And, you know, I could be up at Hunts Point. I could be in Brooklyn. I could be in Jersey. Most of the time, I just prefer to stay at the meat market district here, but it's only a handful of people left down here. That's why I have to, you know, go further away. I start at 4 o'clock in the morning. I'm up at 4 o'clock in the morning, and I start getting some phone calls from my suppliers. And this way, they tell me, I have some nice car. Meat just came in. I think it's aboard your trip, and then I head that way, and before I go, I might give someone else a call. Now, do I have to go that far? You have the same thing. All our meat is pretty much grass-fed. It's all from the Midwest. It's mainly Colorado, Iowa, and Sioux City, and Nebraska.
So, can you tell me a little bit, you know, I know that the market on 14th used to be much more robust.
Oh, yeah.
So, kind of when you started buying meat, what did it look like, and how quickly was that change? Was it like all in one fell swoop one year, or was it slowly over time?
It slowly shrunk. It started, let's say, from 14th Street all the way down to Horatio Street. Horatio Street was our last stop. Jane Street now that I think of it. And there was two places there. One sold, like, what we call offals, which is, you know, the inners and brains and tongues. He specialized in that. Across the street was another place called Eagle Brand, which they done the smoking. We would go there for pastrami's, hot dogs and stuff. Everything came right out. And once in a while, if the right guy brought it down, he'd give you a hot dog right from the smoke room. But, you know, like that. When did I start? If you got there after 6 o'clock in the morning, it would take you at least a half hour to get from one end of the street to the other. But there was that busy of a place. And you couldn't just park into a pickup area. If you picked up and you left, they throw you out. They say, you got to move your truck. I got to get somebody else in. I got to get somebody else. You know, things like that. Now, you could stay there. Don't worry about it.
Really?
Yeah, pretty much.
So I have to imagine it was pretty important to cultivate personal relationships with people to kind of have them looking out for you or as you're coming through. I mean, can you talk?
Well, that has to do a lot with my father. We're on Bleecker Street for almost 65 years. And, you know, as old as I am, I've always gone down to the market. I'm the market brother. And, they give me the respect that they would give my father. And we get along, we haggle with them. But it's not only for my benefit, but it's on to the consumer as well. It's not like, you know, we buy hundredweights. We don't buy just 1 pound or 2 pounds. A nickel and a dime and a quarter adds up to a lot of money, which I can save our customers. That's why we work very close.
So that's how, is it the same for beef and lamb and the other animals?
Like, pretty
is
much.
It always 100 weight?
Well, no, I'm just saying, you know, the volume that we use, it's 100. The weight adds up. You know, 2 boxes of meat could be, you know, 100 pounds right there. So, but it's, you know, like that. You know.
So you said you have a special stamp?
I do. We have our name on it. The stamp, we had two stamps, you know, with the whole name on it, and then the Brandon Iron, which has just Otto on it.
And so why stamp it?
So no one else touches it. because one of our suppliers, mainly the beef supplier, he gives us an area where we can hang our meat. If I see, or he, Sam calls me up and says, Frank, we got your trip, like, you know, beautiful carload, come on in. And even if I don't need it, and if he's right, and if it's what I want, because my father taught me to look for three main things, the quality, not only that, the marbling, and the conformation of it, and the color of the fat even. So, you know, while I'm looking at it with my eyes, I'm also touching it with my hands, going down the back, you know, like that. That's the way I was taught. I used to be able, my father taught me how to tell the difference between a young rabbit and a young lamb and stuff like that while it was in the hide. You don't see that no more, but now I look morphed into the color of the bone structure. So that experience.
What's that conformation? What does that mean?
The overall, the way it looks.
Like the...
You know, if, you know, not too lumpy, if it's rough and stuff like that. That's why I would come over there and, you know, look at you, and then I would be putting my arm, my hand down your back. Not doing anything bad.
Checking out the bill. Checking out the bill.
That's it.
So, what I mean, can you describe, and without giving away too many trade secrets, of course, like, what do you look like, a good, like, fat color composition, texture, can you explain a little bit more, like, what
when
that...
Well, when I look at the meat, I'm looking inside the carcass. Well, it's also down into, like, especially beef or veal. It's broken down. The veal is the whole carcass, which is easy because the whole conformation's right there. And a certain weight, I'm looking for a weight level, let's say 800 pounds, 1,100 pounds. And then if it grows too high, then you're going to have too much fat, even though it's prime. You want to stay within a range, like maybe 850 or something like that. The veal's a little less, maybe a couple hundred pounds. So then it gets too heavy also for the customer. You know, if you buy a leg of veal or a hind quarter or stuff like that, sometimes you do want some heavier meat, but the bone structure has to be a certain color. If it's too dark, I could tell if it was frozen. People, you know, like if I buy a suckling pig, I could tell if it was frozen by looking in the eyes and the color of it.
Wow. So why were you chosen to be the market brother?
That's a good question. I don't know. Maybe because I carried more than my other brothers. Maybe my father let me carry more heavier things than my other brothers. Not Jerry. Jerry's the oldest. He got away with murder.
That's how I see my family. I didn't get away with anything, but my youngest sister.
Yeah.
Oh, she
got the youngest and the oldest. I'm like in the middle between two, you know, I'm the pendulum here, you know? Right in the middle.
Now, after you graduated high school, did you go on to college or did you come back to the shop?
No, actually, I went to a trade school. And I did learn more of the technical works of the butchering. I also took up cooking and baking in my school. So I do like to cook, you know, not that I'm going to be a pro like you, maybe, but it was therapy for me, and I enjoyed it. And, you know, but it helps me also with my customers as well, because, you know, they ask me something, and I try to read the paper to see if there's any recipes in there that I can, you know, get familiarized with what they may ask me. And then sometimes they'll even ask me, did you see that recipe? What do you think? And, you know, they ask me for my own opinion. So, like things like that.
What do you like to cook lately?
What do I like to cook? That's a good question. I love pork and I have prime rib. Prime rib is outstanding.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Everyone loves prime rib.
Well, if you ever see a car with prime rib on, then you know I'm nearby. That's my license plate.
Really?
Yeah.
And what temperature do you cook here?
I do it at 350 generally.
Yeah?
But the main thing is, like, to leave it at room temperature for 2 or 3 hours, depending on how big the roast may be. If it's a steak, I just leave it up, take it out of the refrigerator at least an hour before. Either way, either summer or winter.
That comes to about a pound 3/4.
So it'll come up to
temperature.
Before you cook it.
Yeah. I don't want to shock it, like, you know?
Yeah. When you were a kid growing up, I mean, were you an athlete? Did you hang out in the neighborhood?
I did.
Get into trouble? Like,
of course. Everybody gets into trouble. You know, we used to play handball against the wall, box, you know. And I did play basketball for high school. And I played basketball for the CYO and for the Lions League.
One of the things I've been reading about, maybe you've seen a little bit in the news, is they're doing all this DNA testing on fish and finding out that, like, people were getting sold fish that are told it was one breed, but it was another. I mean, can you talk, because you're up there at the markets, like, you know, you obviously have a ton of experience, but is that something you've seen over the years, or more or less of, people trying to pass something off?
Well, first of all, fish is a four-letter word, and I don't even use that word.
I'm sorry.
Then, again, it's, you know, they used to, at one point they said farm fish was healthy, and then they found out it wasn't. But who wants to eat fish anyway? Meat is your thing. Meat is protein and iron.
And have you guys always carried grass-fed versus grain-fed, or was that a change that you made?
It was pretty much more grass-fed. Because, you know, we don't say organic, we do say natural.
What do you think people understand you mean when you say natural? What does that kind of bring to mind?
Well, sometimes they think the government should have a better understanding between organic and natural, but sometimes I just tell them it has a bigger backyard. Organic has a bigger backyard.
That makes sense. Can you tell me about some of your favorite customers over the years?
Oh, they're all great people. Well-educated, and a lot of, you know, theatrical people, attorneys and whatever. And they, believe it or not, they also like to cook, so that's why we have a good relationship. And it's, we're family-oriented, and I've gone to weddings and funerals to some of our customers. In fact, unfortunately, I have to go to a funeral this weekend. For one of my suppliers, you know.
All the right reasons.
Cool. Anything I missed? Anything you want to share or talk about that we should make sure?
I heard you ask Joe about how did you meet your wife.
Yeah, how did you meet your wife?
It's a funny story. We got John's Pizzeria, who's right across the street from us, and we supply John's Pizzeria. And one day I said, there was two owners, they're two brothers, Joe and Chubby. And I called him Chubby, but of course his name was Augustine. So I said to Chubby, he said, Chubby, who's that girl? He said, that's my niece.
Yeah.
Really? I didn't know you had a niece. He goes, yeah, today's her birthday. Why don't you call her up? So I called her up on her birthday. 47 years later, we're still married.
What? Come on.
Honest to God. Really.
You saw it, you went for it.
I did.
All those years of training kind of
yeah,
paid off, right?
Well, there you go. Hands and everything.
Visit the Ottaminelli brothers and see for yourself. They're at 285 Bleecker Street in the West Village in New York City. Thanks for listening to this program. This program was produced and hosted by Aaron Fairbanks and edited by Jack Inslee for HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Thanks again to our sponsor, Heritage Foods USA, heritagefoodsusa.com.